down because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men, and I won't be ruled by the dancing wind. Taking your rights to self-defense. Say you're stable, but they don't make sense. Not turn into guns. All the food you know is asking for. All the bodies made on foreign shores. Come a day when you'll be real hell's pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men, and I won't be ruled by the dancing.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all of the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. So, it has been quite the day. And the hits just keep on coming. We had a rally. President Trump's first campaign rally, if you will, took place on the Texas border town of El Paso. For those of you who did not watch it, I implore you, go watch it on YouTube for yourself. Don't take the snippets and clips at face value. There's a lot of great moments that are still being overlooked and ignored, and there were a lot of great moments. But then take the time, go over and watch video footage of Beto O'Rourke's dueling rally. Because, you see, Beto thought this would be his best moment, his best opportunity to try and stand out from the rest of the Democratic crowd. And he figures, this is my chance. Either I'm going to go for it, or I know I shouldn't bother. I'm going to a city, a town that is in my home district, a district that elected me to represent them at one point in time, a district that bought into the Beto O'Rourke mystique, the magic of the young, good-looking, charismatic, although I'm curious what happened, because if you see footage of this particular rally, doesn't appear quite so charismatic. In fact, he almost looks like one of those flailing arm inflatable tube guys at times. He's doing these exaggerated movements, trying to look cool. I mean, it's literally like he's become a caricature of himself. At least that was my takeaway. But what was really great, watch the Trump rally first. Too many good moments. But then go back and see if you can tell from watching the Beto rally what's going on in the Trump rally at the time, because they were within earshot of each other. They were literally close enough that you could hear the applause from the Trump rally during the Beto rally. Beto was just doing this, doing that, and he got this false sense. He got this false sense of doing well at certain points and getting crowd reaction, not from the Well, the estimates are still not real good just yet, but somewhere around 200 to 250, based on what I saw, is probably being generous. But about the 200 or so people being overwhelmed by the 35,000 plus people that overflowed and stayed outside of the building where Trump's rally was at. And it was as if Trump had planned this instead of O'Rourke. It was as if this was full-on WWE SmackDown in the middle of El Paso. And it is literally just, you would have, I mean, I'm not exaggerating, I promise you, but I'm not going to tell you anymore at this point. Just watch it for yourself. It's the only way that you'll know for sure. It's the only way that you know that you can take my word for it. All right, and you know what I'm always telling you, don't take my word for it. All right, here a little bit later, we're scheduled to be joined by Daniel Buttafuoco. This will be the second time he's on the show. We did try to have him on last week, and unfortunately, he wasn't able to connect, didn't have the best of phone service where he was at the time. So I have it on good authority we're going to be able to do this tonight, and we're going to continue to talk about this ridiculous, barbaric, partial birth abortion New York law that I believe has fully overturned Roe versus Wade all by itself. We just need other states that want to go in the other direction with the abortion law to file suit against New York. Let the Supreme Court – this is actually – the left has caused this to come to pass. Let's let it finally get taken to the Supreme Court. Let's push it quickly. Let's get it there. Let's fast-track it, whatever we got to do. But New York's law either has to go kapooey under the Supremacy Clause, which realistically they shouldn't. We know they will. People don't understand the Supremacy Clause. This is one of my newer pet peeves where I'm trying to get people to understand. You know, I talk to a lot of people that are on our side of the political spectrum, people that tend to lean to the right, maybe just a little bit over, or maybe mid-range to nearly far right, and they still don't understand. The Supremacy Clause never said that whatever the federal law passes, it's automatically superior to the state laws and you must acquiesce. That's not what it says, and that's not what it means. There are standards that have to be met. The question of the constitutionality of the federal law is very much a standard. So we'll talk a little bit of that. I'm going to ask him about those aspects and something else that I think Donald Trump is being very wise to do. He's pushing this point because we are in full-on campaign mode now. There is no mistake about it. It started at the State of the Union address, and we are definitely in full campaign mode now. And it seems that he's at least signaling at this point in time Donald Trump is willing and prepared to make abortion a campaign issue this go around. So I'll ask Buttafuoco about that as well. In the meanwhile, before we get on to some of tonight's stories, let's take a quick peek in the chat room and, well, let's see if the chat room is going to let me in. All right. We had Chief from Simple Facts of Life and Boyd the Alaskan in here early on. And now we've got Alaskan COG who's joined us as well. So glad to have you guys. Very, very happy that you're here. A little surprised some of the overflow from Kel Show hasn't made it over here yet. Normally they do fairly quickly, but you know what? They could be doing other things, and that's fine. So, at any rate, glad to have you guys here. And let's get started, shall we? Now, like I already mentioned, we are already in the campaign mode. All right, we can't kid ourselves about it. I mean, it's not like we really leave campaign mode that much anymore. You know, it used to be we'd get a full couple of years off, and then folks would start kind of wading into the waters, and you really wouldn't have to be overly concerned about too much in the way of who wants to be president until, like, the last 5 to 6 months going into that election. So in other words, like this year, we wouldn't be starting to see folks thinking about it and really making announcements until like July or August of this year. That's when they would first start kind of testing the waters. Now, they would be in. They would definitely be in before the end of this year. But there would be more caution. There'd be more concern. Now, there's good reason for this. The 24-hour news cycle now makes everybody feel like they've got to be making the headlines, or else they're going to be left behind. They're going to be forgotten. And there does seem to be, with so many interested parties, an honest advantage to trying to get in before others do. Now, this has already caused some flubs. Kamala Harris, in particular, has already had to backstep from one of her statements in regards to just doing away with private sector insurance. She was all on board with that. Just do away with that, blah, 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 blah. And less than 24 hours, she's backed away from it, even though she had some fellow Democratic senators jump on board with it. Well, now she's managed to find herself in that awkward position where she's trying to prove she's authentic enough. Because the black community doesn't necessarily accept her as being black enough. Why? Because she was a district attorney. And then when she was the Attorney General of California, she was like the ultimate district attorney. So a lot of the folks from the community, a lot of the men and women that are living back in the California hoods, they don't see this as a black woman that was down with the struggle. They see this woman as somebody who's at best a narc, and at worst, somebody who was trading favors to try and be successful in the white man's world, and along the way forgot what it meant to be black. There has been a lot, although you've got to go to social media to find it. You're not going to hear it on your local news television broadcast. You're not going to hear it on your local radio broadcast. You've got to hit those dark recesses. You might even have to go all the way to Twitter. Oh, the scariness of it. But there has already been a lot of pushback against Kamala Harris that she's simply not black enough, not authentic enough. Some people haven't bothered to mince words about it. They haven't even said, now this isn't about being authentic. This is about being black. You ain't black, woman. Now, to me, I've always had issue with anybody who is so riled up and so invested in identity politics that they can't separate themselves from it. But beyond that, if you're going to be there, nothing gets under my skin more than when you tell me that Ben Carson isn't black enough, when you tell me that Herman Cain isn't black enough, when you tell me whoever you want to pick, just because they happen to disagree with you politically, or just because they haven't accepted the role of permanent victimhood, that they have taken it upon themselves to better themselves and improve their lives, they're wrong to try and accuse them of being an Uncle Cracker, or not a Knuckle Cracker, an Uncle Tom. Sorry, I was thinking Kid Rock, Uncle Cracker. I got music going on in my head. And the reason I'm thinking about that is because in Kamala Harris's most recent faux pas, she has admitted to smoking marijuana, but her story doesn't quite mesh up. Now, she was on a podcast, and she admitted to smoking marijuana, and because of the old Bill Clinton joke about how he smoked it, but he never inhaled, she very jokingly said, and I did inhale, with her freaking Hillary Clinton's kind of nervous laughter. I mean, for a second, I thought she had literally traded places with Hillary Clinton. If you've heard the footage, I mean, the audio, I haven't seen the video from it. I understand there is video that goes with it, but I've only heard the audio. But it was just, it was kind of scary for a moment. It's like she's channeling her inner Hillary. But anyway, she said that she did this in college. But part of her story doesn't mesh up. And now There's some legitimate questions about whether or not she smoked marijuana while she was still in college or while she was arresting people for minor drug offenses, because that is something she did as DA. Now, the question, and it's been all over social media, question came out this past Monday morning after Harris said that she smoked a joint during an interview with a radio show called The Breakfast Club. And the co-host of the radio show asked Harris if she ever smoked marijuana, to which the California senator replied, "I have, and I did inhale. I did inhale. It was a long time ago, but yes, I just broke loose." Then Harris also added that she claimed that when she smoked the joint, that it was back in college, and she remembered being high. She distinctly remembered it. And then she said, "I think marijuana gives a lot of people joy, and we need more joy in the world." Now, obviously, she's so trying to placate to the base, trying to make every black person in the state of California, at least, and she's hoping for black folks around the rest of the country will say, "Oh, she likes being high, and she thinks it's just a source of joy." They want them to forget why they question her authenticness. She's trying to spin this, but to me, that should be more insulting to the black community, because she is literally, it's strictly a ploy, and she's trying to play. She thinks that every single one of you black folks out there in America, she thinks that you're going to suddenly see her in a different light, a favorable light, if you believe that she's okay with legalizing marijuana, at the very least, non-enforcement of marijuana laws. We need more joy in the world. Well, she was then asked, because it was a radio show, she then asked what kind of music she listened to when she smoked. And here's where Harris kind of stepped in it, because she said, "Oh, yes, definitely Snoop and Tupac for sure." Except the timeline doesn't quite match up. She graduated from Howard University in 1986. And then from the University of California, Hastings College of Law, in 1989. For those of you who listen to the show and are not hip-hop connoisseurs, for the record, to understand where the timeline goes askew, Tupac released his first album, Tupacalypse Now, on November 12th of 1991. That's a full 2 years after she had graduated law school. 2 years after Miss Kamala Harris graduated law school. So, was she smoking when she was in college and just doesn't remember? Was she smoking and remembers the music right but not the time frame right, because she can't admit that she was smoking while she was actually being a DA? Or is she just lying about the whole thing, once again, to play to a base that she thinks will not accept her unless they believe that she's a pothead? Now, just to prove the point also, Snoop Dogg, he released his first album, Doggy Style, on November 23rd, 1993, better than 2 years after Tupac. These are first albums, okay? So Doggy Style out 4 years after Harris graduated law school, Tupac 2 years after. In fact, like I said, by the time Tupac and Snoop began releasing albums, Harris was already working as a deputy district attorney in Alameda County, California. She started that job in 1990 and left in 1998. So, like I already said, either Harris lied about who she was listening to while smoking, or more charitably, doesn't remember who she listened to and named the first artist that she thought of, which also should be insulting, because she thinks all you pothead black folks are only listening to Tupac and Doug. It's Snoop Dogg. Or she actually had her one joint while she worked as a deputy district attorney. While she was literally putting people away for smoking marijuana. Now, in her book, The Truth We Hold, Harris talks about her newfound support for decriminalizing, enunciation being important, marijuana, saying we need to expunge nonviolent marijuana-related offenses from the records of millions of people who've been arrested and incarcerated so they can get on with their lives. Harris hasn't always supported marijuana legalization, though. And of all places, it's CNN that details as recently as 2010, when Harris was San Francisco district attorney, she opposed legislation that would legalize marijuana in the Golden State. Her then campaign manager, a gentleman by the name of Brian Brokaw, told Capital Weekly that Harris, and I quote, believes that drug selling harms communities, but did support the use of medical marijuana. She continued this belief all the way through 2015 when she spoke at the Democratic State Convention. Now, earlier in her career, she worked to put nonviolent marijuana users behind bars. This is part of why she's not seen by many in the black community that are most familiar with her as being authentic, as being black enough. Now, I, for one, don't care how black she is or think she has to be. She is who she is. Kamala Harris is Kamala Harris. And if you are counting on only identity politics, maybe this is a big deal to you. But to me, if this is how you decide who you vote for, then you probably shouldn't be allowed to vote. And I'll substitute the word probably with most definitely. You most definitely should not be allowed to vote. And that's something else that kills me every time you hear people talking about voter suppression. Some people should be left out of the voter rolls. Some people are just simply not qualified to vote, period. They don't understand enough about what's going on around them. They don't understand enough about how actually policies work. They don't understand enough about anything to say much of anything. All right. At any rate, this is just one more step down the road towards the Democratic presidential nomination for 2020, or as I'm going to start referring to it as Demopocalypse Now. Because these people, all these candidates, are going to try and distance themselves and outpace themselves. And you literally have all these people jumping into this race because they believe all of them can beat Donald Trump. Not one single one of them has had the thought occur to them that this BS that they're doing to one another right now and will only get worse is the very reason why they got Donald Trump in the first place. They don't understand it. They don't get it. It's just that simple. Checking into the chat room. And some interesting conversation going on in there, guys, which is this my opportunity to once again remind all of you listening but who do not listen live, if you were to come here to the blogtalkradio.com home platform of the show and listen when we are live, you can see everything that's going on in the chat room as a guest without having to sign up. But if you want to take that next step, you can sign up for free. Just establish yourself an account, and then you can set yourself up a screen name, and you can interact in these chat rooms with everyone else who's in here, not just at my show, but at all the various shows. I promise you, you'll find something you like no matter what it is you like. In fact, you might even find something that surprises you that you like, but you can interact in that. And the other really super cool thing, you might be motivated to pick up a microphone yourself. And having signed up still for free, you can do your own 30-minute podcast. That's a heck of a deal. I don't know. There may be three or four other platforms that will let you do like 30 minutes for free. But you see, it's a trap. I'll warn you of that right now. It is a trap. Some people can be content just doing 30 minutes. But if you start doing it and you start getting a following and you start enjoying it, the next thing you know, 30 minutes, this isn't going to be enough. So it is a trap. I'll warn you. You may find yourself wanting to participate in a fashion that you did not expect. All right. So there was some other stuff that went on, and I don't have a whole lot of time to get into it at this moment. So we'll see how long I end up talking with Mr. Buttafuoco. But I definitely want to talk to some extent about how this whole Ilhan Omar anti-Semitism thing is going. And it is quite the mess. So the highlights, in case you have missed any of this, you've been hiding under a rock. I mean, this is definitely not the kind of story I normally talk about, because I usually spend some time looking for things that are being underreported. This one is getting an adequate amount of reporting, I think, from conservative news outlets. You're still not seeing much of it from the mainstream. They don't want to talk about it this much. But she made some more anti-Semitic tweets, which party leadership said, hey, you know what, would really like you to publicly apologize for those remarks. She wasn't happy about it, but she made a half-hearted effort at apologizing. And then as soon as her apology part was over, which just sounded so very sincere, I must say, then she immediately doubled down on her anti-Semitic remarks. And now, even some of the mainstream media is starting to notice, and they are still trying to provide her cover. We have folks literally out there talking about not how bad it is that Ms. Omar is such an obvious and blatant anti-Semite. No. They're talking about how bad it is for the party that she is, because she's so open about it. Now, pay close attention to the wording, boys and girls. They're upset because she's out in the open. It reveals what a lot of them already think. Now, their failure, their lack of willingness to be supportive of Israel tells you everything you really need to know. It really does. But when it comes to how the media that is outside of the conservative outlets are covering this, it's about how terrible this is, that it's giving opportunity for Republicans. Excuse me, say what? It's terrible because it's giving opportunity for Republicans. It's terrible because the Republicans are going to be able to take advantage of this. Well, how about it's terrible that she's a freaking anti-Semite? How about that it's terrible that she probably doesn't belong in Congress in the first place, and that she should probably have been impeached already by her home district? I mean, whether you want to admit it or not, it's not cool to have been married to your brother, as Ms. Omar was. It's not cool to have been married to your brother for the express purpose of trying to evade proper immigration laws. Anyway, all that being said, it is that magic time of the show. Let me play the Edwards Notebook, the veterans, the songs and stories, veterans tip of the month. And while we do that, I will be diligently working on the phone, seeing if I can't get Mr. Daniel Buttafuoco on the line. So stay with me. I will be right back. I hope.
A great American history maker finally gets the recognition she deserves. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, Dr. Gladys West, one of the four hidden figures featured in the movie Hidden Figures, recently was given formal recognition for her inventive genius behind the development of the global positioning systems. The 87-year-old genius mathematician, one of four black American women portrayed in the Hidden Figures movie, joined an elite group of professionals recently recognized by the Air Force Space Command. She was also publicly honored for her tremendous work as a member of a team of all-black professionals who did computing for the United States military before electronic systems were available. West and her black American colleagues excelled to the heights of intellectual achievement. They did not allow Jim Crow Democrat bigots to deter them from reaching their God-given potential of greatness. Congratulations, Dr. Gladys West, and all the one-time hidden figures who chose the high road of greatness over the low trail of bitterness often exhibited by many individuals today who only have themselves to blame for their self-induced lack of achievement. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on SHR Media, AmericaManners.us, and 12 a.m. Sundays on Talk America Radio Network.
Ron Edwards, the new voice of America.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
Dan Perkins here with your songs and stories for Soldiers.us, Veterans Tip of the Day. How do you know if you're getting the best medication when you're sick? Did you know that the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, reported recently that between 20% and 50% of all antibiotics prescribed in acute care hospitals are either unnecessary or inappropriate? The misuse of antibiotics has also contributed to the growing problem of antibiotic resistance, which has become one of the most serious and growing threats to public health in the United States. Here is your Songs and Stories for Soldiers Tip of the Day. Medicare and Medicaid have started a new policy called the Antibiotic Stewardship Program. The result is that hospitals, nursing homes, and other healthcare facilities must test you to make sure you're getting the right medication. The cost of the test is covered by Medicare. So go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us for more information about this important service. This has been your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for staying with us through that brief break. And now joining me on the line, welcoming back to the show, Daniel Buttafuoco, a New York City trial lawyer and author of the book Consider the Evidence, A Trial Lawyer Examines Eyewitness Testimony in Defense of the Reliability of the New Testament. Daniel, thank you very much for joining us again. I appreciate it. And real quick, let's get a little plug in for the book before we go too far astray with the conversation, because it's a great book and I want people to know about it.
Well, I wrote this book with the idea of sort of giving a reason for why we believe the Christian faith. Started from a debate I had with a fellow trial lawyer about 25 years ago, in which he challenged my faith at a cocktail party, and the party split in two, and half the people were cheering me on and half were cheering him on. I left the party thinking that, well, I knew I was a good lawyer and knew how to communicate, but I didn't feel I did an adequate job in explaining the Christian faith or why I believed it. And so I embarked on 25 years of study and eventually got a master's degree in theology, and put together some evidences for the faith and put it together in a pop format so the average person could understand it. And my goal is to explain to people why we believe that the New Testament is a special book.
Now, last time you were on, we talked pretty much exclusively about the book, and you laid out some of those cases. And I have to tell you, even if I had not been a Bible believer before, you made a very strong, compelling argument that is not only logical, but it doesn't necessarily depend on you accepting the faith part as long as you accept the historical parts of what's being laid out. So I think that is an excellent way to go about the arguments, and I'm very impressed with the book, and I was impressed with your argument. So if there's anybody who's listening who missed that broadcast, by all means, you can check that out in the archives, which fortunately all these shows are archived immediately after the show. Let's talk about the New York partial birth abortion law. It's certainly caused a stir, but I'm curious from your aspect, both of a religious believer and a lawyer, what you feel like these implications are, because, you know, for those of us who see abortion on demand as a force, as a form of birth control, it is just one of the most abhorrent things that we have seen in a long time. But you actually live there and you work in court. So I'm curious, what do you think the ramifications are going to be? And are you already seeing something going on in New York where you feel like this may become a major thing? Or do you think it's kind of going to fall by the wayside as far as being a hot button issue?
No, well, Tim, it's not going to fall by the wayside. And what I'd like to point out is that laws reflect morality. Laws in a democracy reflect the morality of the people who allow these laws to be passed. Laws in a monarchy, for example, would reflect the morality of the king, if he would be supreme. But in a democracy, people are the final say. So the problem with this law is what it says about us as a people, and it shows how far away we've gotten from biblical morality and just the sanctity of life. You know, if I, as I've been saying, if you can justify this law, if you can justify the killing of babies minutes before they're born or even shortly after they're born, then you really can justify anything. And that's the scary part of this law to me, because it reflects so badly on the morality of our country that I am just really worried about what's coming after this. And the other thing that's really troubling about it is not so much that the politicians will literally do and say anything to keep their jobs or to get elected to higher office. That is sort of a given. We can't really expect them to do anything moral. They would do anything. They would throw their own mother under the bus if they could get to be president. So that doesn't surprise me. What did surprise me is that people in the Christian community cheered this law as if this was some kind of a triumph of human virtue, when it's exactly the opposite. And as I said repeatedly, if babies could vote or if a fetus could vote, we wouldn't have these types of laws. It is really sickening. And people who aren't lawyers have to understand how laws work. You know, I was talking to somebody recently, and they were like, well, you know, it's to protect the life of the mother. And yes, but the standard is so vague, and that's the problem with laws. And you have to realize this as a lawyer, there's always that gray area. And we have something called the law of unintended consequences. And I'm hearing from people that actually work in crisis pregnancy centers, people I know personally, who are saying things like, people come in looking for an abortion because they can't handle morning sickness. You know, and look, I don't want to be critical of women. I love women. I lived with four women, wife and three daughters. Women are great. I like them a lot better than men. And so, you know, it's tough to – I'm not a woman, so it's tough to put myself in a woman's shoes. But, you know, and they make the argument, you know, don't tell me what to do with my body. But, I mean, it seems to me obvious that it's not just a woman's body that's involved. It's another body growing inside of her. And at some point, there has to be a humane approach to this. I mean, we treat whales and puppies better than we treat the unborn in this country. And to me, it's just shocking as to what it says about the morality of Americans in 2019.
Damn. Well, I couldn't agree with you more, because I don't think there was anybody who pays attention at all to politics and where Governor Cuomo had been going with his policies as of late, that's surprised by it. I think what really has created such a vitriolic reaction amongst a lot of folks, particularly on the right and particularly among Christians and other religious groups that still believe in the sanctity of life, was not that they did it as much as how we saw them celebrate it. You would have literally thought they had just won the Super Bowl the way they behaved. And it was just – it crushes your soul to think that this is a fellow human being that can be this callous. And then we saw it reflected perhaps even worse with the Virginia governor and his statement on the radio about how if one of these children survives the abortion and it's given birth, is alive even by the liberal standard or the far leftist standard, we're finally breathing on your own, that if the mother didn't want it, then they'll keep the child comfortable and then there'll be a discussion. Now, he didn't come out and say what the discussion was, but it was clear the intention was that discussion was about whether or not to go ahead and kill that baby that had just been born. And when we see this, you can't help but cringe just a little bit and wonder, how can we even be the same species to be so callous about the care of our own young?
Yeah, I mean, it's just tragic to think that people would ever find any type of joy in passing a law like this. I mean, even if you were to be at the execution of a convicted serial murderer, it would still be a somber moment. But to erupt in celebratory shouts at the idea that, you know, we should in some way be able to do this is absolutely unbelievable. And I want to say this, Christians have to wake up. Good people, moral people have to wake up. You know, we've sort of had it good in this country for a long time. We sort of took for granted that the right things would happen because we always expected it to be. At some point, we have to start fighting for what we believe in. You know, the Bible says in Jude chapter 3 that we need to contend for the faith, which is once and for all entrusted to the saints. Now, that Bible is written to all believers everywhere. And that word, contend, is the same word that is used when you have contenders in a boxing ring. We are to contend for the faith, contend for our values. So just as there's people contending for this idea that we should kill babies, Christians are going to have to start contending for the idea of life. Now, I'm not advocating violence. I'm not advocating, you know, anything drastic, except that people are going to have to start speaking up for their faith. And, you know, I know the PC police want to silence us and start, you know, telling us that, you know, we're supposed to act and talk a certain way. First of all, the whole idea of political correctness is nonsense. You want people to be able to say what they think, because if someone's a racist, you want to hear it out of their mouth and then you know it. If someone hates Jews, you want to hear it out of their mouth so then you know it. You don't want to silence people. You want to know what's in their heart. The only way to know what's in their heart is for people to be able to say what's on their mind. Now, that's a bad example, but there's also good examples of people saying what's in their heart. And people are going to have to stick up for the unborn and stick up for life and stick up for love and stick up for forgiveness and stick up for Christian values and stick up for the Bible and stick up for traditional America. That's not a bad thing. You know, when you say traditional America, the left immediately calls that racism and segregation. That's not what we're talking about when we say traditional America. We're talking about people that believed in this thing called duty, people who believed in this thing called life and right and wrong, and in trying to live a moral life. Listen, we're not perfect, but we're not even trying anymore as a society, and that's really scary.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this real quick. Does it give you hope that right now President Trump seems to be signaling hard and heavy that he's more than willing to make the abortion issue a campaign issue in the hopes that others will also raise that banner and raise that cause as these folks start scrambling for elected offices in the upcoming 2020 election cycle?
Well, I want to start by saying I always have hope. My hope is not in Trump, by the way. My hope is in God, and God is going to use whoever and whatever it takes to combat this type of rank evil. And typically who God uses are his people. However, if his people are going to remain silent and they're not going to say anything, or they're not going to act like Christians, you know, because faith without works is dead, the Bible says. You know, we could say we believe, but if we don't act upon these beliefs, then that's a dead faith. That's not a real faith. So the Trumps of the world, they serve a purpose. They'll come and go just like anybody else. And thank God for some of the things he's doing. But my hope is not in any one man. Trust me, it's going to take more than President Trump to fix this mess. We have a sea change in the way the body politic sort of views morality at this point, and it's just completely, everything's upside down. I mean, we don't even have to go through the list of all the craziness that's going on, but it's not the same America that I grew up in the 70s.
Right. Well, I certainly appreciate the answer, and you're absolutely right. It's going to take more than one person to fix things. It's going to take us standing together and being heard and becoming unified and putting all these things that have kept us separated aside, and understand that we can be that great nation we once were before. And faith is going to be a big part of getting us to that point. But I really meant more the fact that we've had so many politicians in the past that were willing to run away from it rather than address it. And it's been the case with a lot of the aspects of the culture war that we seem to have been losing for the last several decades. And I certainly feel good that there is finally somebody who at the highest stage with the big bully pulpit is willing to start speaking up. Again, like you said, he's not the most articulate man. He's probably not the ideal person we want leading the charge, except for the fact that we know that when he picks up a fight, he doesn't back down, for better or for worse. So
That's actually true. But what I was really trying to say, and maybe I didn't say it well, is that we need to – the problem is not political as much as it is a moral problem. In other words, when we have an immoral public, we're going to get immoral leaders in Congress, and we're going to get immoral laws. This has to be done at a grassroots level. People are going to have to rise up. Little old knitting Christian grandladies are going to have to get up and start voting, and not only voting, but actually speaking out for what they believe, because the time for silence is long gone. We have to start to really raise awareness of values, and then I think we'll continue to get even better and better leaders, and hopefully it will be a sea change, and the momentum will shift. Right now, Trump is sort of like we're viewing him as a bulwark against the slide. But you know, how many fingers can you put in the dike? You know what I'm saying? And it's,
right.
Again, it's one guy. We need more than that.
Yeah, we need to retake our homes. We need to start rebuilding families, and we need to start instilling traditional American values. And I couldn't agree with you more. So again, one more time, Daniel, please let everybody know where they can find the book. And while you're at it, if you're inviting people to follow you on social media, please feel free to share that. But any websites you want to share, just any closing thoughts you want to leave to, feel free.
Thank
the microphone is yours.
Oh, thank you very much. The book is called Consider the Evidence. A trial lawyer examines eyewitness testimony in defense of the reliability of the New Testament. That's what I am. I'm a trial lawyer. My name is Daniel Buttafuoco. The firm is Buttafuoco & Associates. You can find me on the web, ConsiderTheEvidenceBook.com. It's also available on Amazon. It sold out twice, and we restocked it. And it must have hit a nerve, because a lot of people are picking it up. And I'm happy to discuss it. I have a lot more material to defend the Christian faith. I'm going to contend for the faith. And whoever's listening, they better start contending for the faith also. Jude 3, read that scripture. Contend for the faith once and for all entrusted to the saints.
All right. Keep up the good fight, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for being with us tonight. And I do hope we get to speak again soon.
Thank you, Tim. God bless you.
God bless you as well. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Daniel P. Buttafuoco, author of Consider the Evidence. And by all means, if you haven't had a chance to check it out, please do. It is a great book, and the man has made some really great arguments. Now, I had hoped to broach the issue with him in regards to this notion, and I believe it's fully correct. I believe that Roe v. Wade has been overturned if the New York law is allowed to stand. I think it needs to be challenged, and I think that this is the way to actually break it. The leftists have accidentally broke it all on their own, because ultimately the federal government has no power, no authority to define life. They have no power or authority to control lives, only to put laws in place that are moral and righteous, that are designed to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is their mandate. I mean, it's just fancy words, and we laugh at them. And, you know, we don't take promises seriously anymore, and we don't take oaths seriously anymore, and we have to get back to base principles and start living them, not just wrapping ourselves up in a flag and pretending like that's enough to be a patriot. Now, and don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing anybody out there, and I'm not pointing fingers at anybody in particular. I'm asking you all to pick up the challenge, to join me in picking up this challenge, and start pushing back against the leftist encroachment on the world. Because it's not just our nation that's under fire, guys. Chief, COG, Boyd, we've got Kel, who's joined us in the chat room now, and Kel is a Canadian, and she's in on this fight. And right now, up in Trudeau, Canada, she's having it far worse than we are. Unfortunately, Daniel had not been hearing this contention, so he hadn't looked into it, so he really didn't feel comfortable talking about the subject. And I thought he would have been probably the perfect guy to talk to, but, you know, as is the case when you want to build a case, which is that's his mindset, he didn't want to broach the topic without having the chance to do the research. But here's the basic situation. Roe versus Wade is supposed to set the standard across all 50 states. Now, again, It's not a law. There is no law. The same thing with same-sex marriage in the United States. There is not a law at the federal level that mandates all 50 states must do it. It was just an opinion rendered by the court. Wrongly so, because this court, for a very long time, even with good justices on it, have failed to recognize the most basic principle, and that is that several issues belong in the hands of the states. All right, Kel, you can go ahead and send that to me whenever you like. I'll be happy to see it. And see, right now, again, let me remind you, if you listen to the show, come listen to the show live. You can be in the chat room and you know exactly what she's talking about. Now, I don't have enough time to give the story its due, talking about Miss Ilhan Omar and her anti-Semitism. I touched on it briefly before we called Daniel. I've got less than 8 minutes legitimately to talk at this point. We'll now make it less than 7 minutes legitimately to talk about it. And there's just not enough time to really get into that. So let me stay on this topic a bit. You know, I find myself kind of bouncing around from time to time. And yeah, I know some of you guys noticed, a few of you commented the last week. In fact, for all of last week's shows, I was very under the weather, but I didn't say anything about it. Sometimes saying something helps me to motivate and get a little harder. I legitimately had this terrible flu thing that's going around down here like wildfire. And for Tuesday and Wednesday night show, I had not eaten anything in like days at that point. I was still running a fever. And some of you guys could tell. Some of you reached out, commented, hey, you didn't sound like yourself. So for those of you who noticed, I appreciate it, and thank you for putting me in your prayers. For those of you who didn't, don't feel bad, because, you know, I'm not the most consistent person behind the microphone. That's something that I'm working to improve on. But I think sometimes I get caught up in trying to do this to make sure that it's good for the radio, or do this to make sure it's good for where we're syndicated over there, or do this to try and get the folks over at iTunes to start paying more attention to the show. And I get caught up in this notion that I need to do more. I need to reach a bigger audience, and I get in a hurry and I get ahead of myself. And part of that is because of the fact that I've been doing this for a little while now. But the other thing is in that process, I get so caught up that I start overlooking what it is that's brought you guys to the show in the first place. And when I do that, the quality of the show suffers. When I go back and listen to stuff now, I'm embarrassed by some of the audio quality on some of the shows. What I've been sharing here on social media. Chief in the chat room. Could have been worse than not sounding like yourself. You could have sounded like me. Well, you know what? That's not such a bad thing, Chief. I know you like doing the self-deprivation thing, but you make great points, and I love your show. But where was I? The point is that I lose track of the fact that I got behind this microphone to bring a message of my own. And it's not just about the guest, although I love having great guests. But, you know, I have those moments where I've had issues. Sometimes the issue's been with BTR. Now, thankfully, BTR has been much better as of late. The last time I said that, started having some issues. But they have been. They've been a lot better as of late. I did get a new mixing board in, a new microphone, and I got a new set of headphones, too. But I haven't broke them in yet. I kind of gotten attached to these cans I've got on now. But I've done this thing little by little because I have to do it little by little. I don't have sponsors, and I don't have big-time contributors, and it gets frustrating. And I've been so frustrated lately because I was approached by four different radio stations that wanted to bring my show to market, but I either needed to put so much cash down to get into that, or I needed to have X number of sponsors already. and then they could fill out the difference. And those were the two areas. And they wanted a higher quality of audio. So I even went out and I started a crowdfunding bit. And you may have noticed, in fact, Kel, who's been really kind in sharing, may have noticed I don't have that in the show description tonight. Because I've decided, you know, if this is what it takes to be successful at that level, that I lose myself in bringing the message, then I don't need to do that. It's not going to do me any good. I'm making it harder on myself, and I'm making people not want to. I literally got attacked on social media for sharing the link. And that kind of bothered me a little bit too, but it did get me to thinking. It's like, you know what? For the longest time, I made a big deal about being completely independent. So here's what I need to do. I'm not pushing that anymore. I'm not wanting anybody to make those contributions. Now, I am still leaving a link up on the Tap Into the Truth Facebook page, and if you want to send something by PayPal to do that, go right ahead. Now I'm getting grief in the chat room. First Chief and Knockout. Sir, could I have some more? My point now is, thank you very much, Kel, is that we're going to forget about that. We're going to do this as I can, as it comes. And if the day comes that I can't do it anymore because of the financials, then I'll have to accept that. I don't need to be worried about how big the audience is anyway, because the audience gets bigger when I'm doing better anyway. And they dwindle away when I'm not. So I've got to stop being so caught up in that, and I need to get back to bringing the message and being what brought you here to this show in the first place, and that's being one of you. Being unafraid to pick up the microphone and say it, being unafraid to be a target for these folks on the left that want to say, blah, 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 you're a bigot, blah, 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 you're a racist, blah, 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 shut up. I'm a man who has an opinion, and guess what? In the United States of America, that still means something. And as long as I can, I'm going to stand up and fight for that freedom and every other freedom for myself, for my for my kids, and for every one of you, including the Chief, who just became the soup Nazi in the chat room. No soup for you. Finally, we have the evidence on Chief. He's been a Nazi all along. He was the soup Nazi. But that right there is a big reason why I'm behind this microphone. And the fact that you guys come here not just on Wednesday nights, not just on Sunday afternoons, not just on Friday nights now. Thank you for joining me then. Not just on the Tuesday night 1 hour bit that I'm doing now. Then thank you very much for coming here then. But because the message needs to be there. And if I can accidentally get into one ear that hasn't heard it before and it turns somebody around, then so be it. If I can't and I'm just preaching to the choir, I can't think of a better choir to be preaching to, because I love you guys. I love you guys in the chat room right now. I love you guys who are ordinarily in here but aren't here tonight. And if you're listening, whether it's over at iHeartRadio or at Spotify or TuneIn.com or Stitcher.com. And I love you guys on Stitcher. That's where the biggest outsource happens to be right now. If you're one of those few people piddling around at iTunes and still listening, thank you. I love you guys. I love America. I love freedom. And that's where I need to be. That's where I hope you'll join me and pick up the cause. And that's where I'm going to have to leave it right now. We will readdress the topics I didn't get to. But in the meanwhile, this is a song that Mr. Matt Fitzgibbons was kind enough to let me use. So please check out patriotmusic.com when you get a chance. And if you already have, check it out again. He's always doing new projects and adding new merchandise. In the meanwhile, this is it for me tonight. Join me tomorrow night when I'll be right back at it. And remember, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort, and more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. Good night, everybody.
like a thousand years since we had real fears, but the old ones won't forget. These broken levee walls had a few close calls, but they haven't fallen yet. And you know the rain's coming, the rain's coming. All your days and all your nights, it brings a storm on you. When the sun beats down and it bakes the ground, and you watch the rich land die. Such a vicious drought, even hopes in doubt, but there are no clouds in the sky. But you know the rain's coming, the rain's coming. All your days and all your nights, it brings a storm on you. When you feel the first drop fall, when it kisses your skin, the storm will begin to bring with it promise of change.